Yeah, 5:55 back at the Roadhouse on the Shore with Julie and Dave on a beautiful Friday evening, sunny and 47 on the shore. Thanks so much for tuning in. Well, Monday is Earth Day, and of course with it all of the sustainability and eco-greening of your attitudes and lifestyles that you can take. Of course, lots of momentum around Earth Day. It's been around since the 70s, and despite all of that emphasis, we're not so good in the climate change department. Of course, climate change on everybody's mind right now. And what can be done is really the question of the of our era right now. Joining us now is Jessica Hellman. She is the director of the Institute on the Environment down at the University of Minnesota. She has a recent article in her director's report entitled Living the Good Life at the End of the World. Certainly a catchy title and a very intelligent interview coming with Jessica Hellman. Thanks so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Hi, Dave. A pleasure to be here.
Well,
it is a beautiful Friday, isn't it?
Is it nice in the Twin Cities? Yeah.
It is. It's spectacular. I hear all across the state.
Lawns are greening up and Earth Day is Monday. And so, fascinating title here, Living the Good Life at the End of the World. I'm a little concerned. The end of the world, is that like because we're on the end of the road here and we live in the woods, or is this like times are changing? What's the end of the world?
Times are changing. Actually, that title in this class that we developed, I teach it with a colleague who's an English professor down here in the Twin Cities. It's a sort of clash of two contradictory ideas, bit of a mashup. So on the one hand, we're all striving to live the good life, right? That's what it's all about. And what in art we explore, and you and I all get to chat about what is the good life. But at the same time, there's this sort of scary recognition that the path that we're on with our planet is not a sustainable one. And that's the end of the world part. Maybe it's a bit dramatic, but it's intended to be provocative. And we think that's the grand challenge. I mean, I think it's unreasonable for expect us all to, we're not going to bring about sustainability by asking people to go live in a cave and sacrifice everything. What we want to do is solve this problem, live a good life, and live within our planetary means.
That's
so
right.
Let's figure that out.
And so the title of your article is also a class that you introduced last fall at the University
That's
of Minnesota.
Right. Yeah, so I wrote about this last month in my blog post. I have this blog, and we call it the Director's Almanac, where I get to muse about the things I'm thinking about or writing about or researching. Or in this case, I wrote about what we're teaching and what we're going to teach again this fall, and that's the title of this course. And then my post also talks about what we learned from our students and this sort of journey. And I really think it's an interesting, as we go into Earth Day, you know, thinking about sustainability is both an individual pursuit and a collective and societal one. And this idea of what is the good life, what should we be doing as individuals, and what responsibilities do we have to sustainability, and then also what responsibilities do we have to one another, and how can we change our whole society? And I'll also say one of the reasons why we did this with students is a lot of young people, this is true at UMD and all across the university campus and students everywhere around the world, are really stressed out, frankly, about the future and what their future is going to be like and their economic opportunities and what the planet and climate change will be like. And so helping them through this journey of their own search of the good life was a motivation for developing the course as well.
Okay, so the good life, what has it been? What has been the typical American dream?
Yeah, so a lot of American conceptions, and certainly this is what a lot of advertisers and retailers tell us, right, is the good life comes from consumption. And that is often the case in many respects, right? We need shelter, we need food, and often we need pleasure, and those come from things that we secure and goods that we purchase. But it's become such a dominant part of how we think about happiness and success. And you turn on the radio, we talk about what was GDP growth the last quarter, as if that's what we're all striving toward. And sort of unpacking that and asking what is it that we want in a good life? And there is some role for consumption, but consumption for consumption's sake, we know doesn't make us happy. So how do we search for happiness and sustainability at the same time? And fortunately, there's a really growing literature in psychology, environmental psychology, and what we know about the problems we actually need to solve from environmental science that can give us some pointers as we search for the good life. But also importantly, the good life is for each of us independently. We all have our own conception. So there's no prescription that we can just follow and all do the same. So it has to be a personal journey.
Well, but a statement you make is that we need to align sustainability with the good life. Mm-hmm. What does that
mean? So we need to acknowledge what are the environmental problems that we're confronting. So carbon emission, greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere, that undermines our planetary sustainability. We got to find a way to live the good life that is a lower carbon economy and reduces our carbon footprint ultimately to zero. We also know that some of the practices that we use or that some of our agricultural practices are not as efficient and sustainable as they could be, and we do know some of the answers about how to address that. We got to put those into practice. And as consumers of those goods, we need to play our part in helping to bring about agricultural sustainability. We know that buying stuff and then throwing them away, there's been a lot of interest in single-use plastics. That's not a sustainable way to live either. So, but that doesn't mean that we all, need to turn out the lights and sit in the closet either. And not get out and participate in things. But it's about what we consume and what technologies we use as we consume that allow us to align that good life and sustainability.
Well, I'm sure you're familiar, Jessica, with the whole reduce, reuse, recycle triangle mm-hmm. of consuming. Have you now seen this new concept of refuse? Have you heard this?
Yes. I have another thought, too, that I like to throw in there, and that's restore. There are some ways in which when we reframe what consumption means, for example, when we think about ecosystems as providing economic goods and services to us, then that incentivizes us to restore natural habitat for the benefit of people. And so it's not just slowing down the way in which we diminish the earth, but thinking about how we can restore it and make it stronger. So that's another one to add to the list.
Sounds like we need one more and we'll have a new triangle.
That's true. A loop, a circle, yes.
Refuse, restore. We're talking with Jessica Hellman. She's the director of the Institute on the Environment down at the University of Minnesota. A recent Director's Almanac article entitled Living the Good Life at the End of the World caught our attention. Turns out it's a class. And you discovered with your students some pretty, I would say, surprising observations. What was one of the most wonderful, I think you phrased the observation being surprising to you. What did you find from your students as you took them down this path?
Well, so it's interesting. When we ask, and I bet many of your listeners, if they sit down and make a list, you sit down with a piece of paper and you write down what's really important to you. The first things you might write down, are they really, really the things that are important to you? So we asked them to think about this multiple times and some of the first things they write down, they are important values, family and friends, and those are enduring values. But if they thought about it a little bit more and looked at their life, they found that comfort and convenience ended up being a major force in maybe they really needed to acknowledge that they valued, and part of that comfort made them happy. So then we talked about what are technologies and strategies for ways of being comfortable or thinking about what are the most important parts of comfort and convenience that are under your control to reduce, say, your carbon footprint. And fortunately, we have a lot of technologies that are increasingly available to us that allow us to maintain somewhat of a comfortable life, but do it in a more sustainable way.
Okay, and I love your statement about this consumers and guilt and sacrifice and how we've been in this society to sort of be tricked into, going green or you're bad. Is that effective though? Has that guilting us into better choices been effective? No.
The literature shows that guilt will get people to respond, and guilt and drama will makes for great media and a lot of quick reaction, but it does not lead to enduring change. That and frankly, also, you know, you see the we still see a strong influence of denial about climate change and some scientific facts that we have about how the world works persistent in our culture, and some of that comes from this not wanting to feel guilty all the time, and instead a positive frame and taking some responsibility and feeling that you have agency or the ability to affect your own life is a much more reinforcing and enduring value, and helps people sustain their sustainability practices. Also helping other people, doing things together in community. This is part of what's great about Earth Day. Earth Day is a time to go out and talk to your neighbors and to kind of go on this journey together. I think some of the talk that we're having in this state about renewable energy is pretty exciting because it allows us to think together about how we're going to transform our economy and make our state economically strong in the future through renewable energy. That's a productive thing to do that creates jobs. And that's not about guilt. That's about creating something good for the future.
That's right. Striving for a legacy, hope for a better future, all of the positives for reasons why. You know, as a car guy, my favorite is Tesla. You know, the alternative doesn't feel like a sacrifice, right? If the clean choice is the better choice, I think we're working towards that.
Yeah, Tesla was a really interesting shift in the electric vehicle market because a lot of the electric vehicles early on were kind of imagined as a kind of sacrifice. You know, we'll sell this to the green consumer who's motivated by this sort of clunky little car, and recognizing that green can be cool or green could be the desirable choice really reframed. And now we hear people talk about, actually, I'm an electric car driver. Most what I love about my electric car is that it's very responsive and peppy, because when you push on the gas, you don't have to wait for the engine to kick in. The electricity flows straight to the drive shaft and it goes. And the other great thing about it is that I don't stand out at the gas station in the rain and the snow. And that's, you know, that's maybe more likely to be the reasons why people would want to drive and buy an electric car, is for its cost and convenience and its fun, not out of a sense of obligation. I mean, the sense of obligation doesn't hurt, but if we're really going to make a big difference and convince lots of people to come along on this journey, it's got to align with the things that we really value.
That's right. Comfort, convenience, and sustainability. Living the good life at the end of the world. This is a global problem. What are your perspectives on, you know, Americans are kind of the poster children for conspicuous consumption. Is it really like our role to change first because we're doing it the worst?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, there are a couple of contradictory ideas there, I acknowledge. I mean, the United States has to take on a leadership role, and we do have responsibility to not ruin this planet, especially for people who were not part of causing a lot of these environmental problems. I mean, Americans are responsible for, you know, off the top of my head, I should know the statistic better, but it's something like a quarter or a third of all the greenhouse gases that have ever been emitted. It may actually be a higher percentage than that come from us. So we do. I'm not saying that we need to necessarily, you know, sacrifice or go backward in time, but we need to take responsibility. But at the same time, we also are naive in thinking that the rest of the world is going to follow a sacrifice path either. We have to create a future that's positive for developing countries. And this is one of the things I think to get particularly excited about. If we can help developing countries create a sustainable economy that leads to the good life, but we do it differently than we developed our own economy, say on the backs of renewable energy instead of fossil fuel, they get to leapfrog past the way we did things sort of into the future. So we can have economic development, and we have lots of goals of bringing people out of poverty, for example. We don't want to sacrifice those, but we can do it in a way that's more sustainable. And I think it's the responsibility of the developing world to show how that can be done. And we can't go around pointing fingers at other people and expecting them to take the lead when we've enjoyed so many of the pleasures of living beyond our means already.
The task at hand, to align sustainability with the good life. I've been speaking with Jessica Hellman, the director down at the Institute on the Environment, and a fascinating article in her Director's Almanac, Living the Good Life at the End of the World. This is in on the environment.umn.edu. And, of course, this will be linked through on this interview next week. Jessica, Monday, Earth Day, what's your special plans for the day?
Well, you know, it's going to be a beautiful weekend. I think that Earth Day also is an important time for us. Well, it might be a little rainy on Sunday, but down here in the cities, but it's an important time to remember. We were talking about what are the things that really motivate people. This sense of stewardship and connection to nature is also, psychology literature tells us, a really important part of reminding ourselves what we're sustaining the planet for ourselves, but for the other things around on this earth with us. So I personally really like spending time outside around Earth Day. For me, at the Institute on the Environment, and my colleagues who work and teach in environmental areas, you know, literally every day is Earth Day.
I knew that would come up. I'm glad you said that. That's Gordon Thorne, one of our guys up here, believes in this as well. We all do.
But I do. Every day should be Earth Day, but at the same time, having an occasion where we stop and take stock of the reality of how much hard work we have to do. And I do think doing that in community, taking some time, if the weather's nice, to be out and talk to your neighbors. We have amazing community solar opportunities in this state, for example, where communities can actually get together and do things collaboratively, so we can take that individual action and we can scale it at the level of our neighborhood. Earth Day is a great time to kind of advance and talk about those ideas. So I hope to be outside and maybe chat with some of my neighbors, but I'm definitely going to spend some time outside appreciating nature this weekend as we go into Earth Day, too.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you. Jessica Hellman, director at the Institute on the Environment, thanks for all your hard work and continued good luck with everything, and we'll stay in touch as this is a problem or a opportunity that is not going to go away.
Thanks, Dave. I wish you the very best on your journey and your search for the good life.
All right. Thanks, Jessica. Take care.
Bye-bye.